when Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about what can cause the gut bacteria to go bad, rogue, and you end up with Parkinson's. University of Alabama, good study that we need to know about. And then, for those of you who enjoy your chicken, and many people do, well, chicken feces is in nearly half of all store-bought chickens tested. Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine shares that insight. And also, because we like to be at the cutting edge and bring you information that is long time coming and that you won't see right now anywhere else, today we're going to share that with you from the Center for Applied Health Sciences, the amylopectin and chromium complex boosts your muscle protein synthesis. This is brand new. And we'll give you the latest on that and why that's important, published in the Journal of International Society of Sports Nutrition, because we have a lot of athletes out there. And also, we want to tell you that there's some good news about a simple garden variety vegetable that people have available and don't eat enough of it, but if they did, it could really help them. And we'll explain how that is possible, what to do about it, because we always want to bring you the latest on everything that's important for your good health. Also today we have a guest, and I'm going to set aside more time than normal, over a half hour, simply because it's a part of our ongoing series on the deep state. That guest is a 17-year former CIA official. He was at the top end of the CIA, and he'll be telling us what we don't know and why the silent state, in effect a silent coup, has been occurring for some time. So you're going to learn a lot today, and I'm going to tie in other issues. And also for those of you who have been concerned about chemtrails, geoengineering, the mainstream media rarely, if ever, covers the subject. And if it does, it always does so in a mocking way, as if, really? You know, where's your tin hat? Well, in the segment with my guest, the former CIA officer who's investigated this, I'm going to play a clip from the just former CIA director talking to the Council on Foreign Relations about geoengineering and chemtrails and why they're a good thing. So, we now have official confirmation from the highest sources of government. Also today, the CIA asset, a major CIA asset, joined the Islamic State in Libya. We'll tell you who he is, how he was working with the U.S. and NATO to overthrow Gaddafi, and then expose his dark side. Oh, and by the way, I'm looking at a photograph of John McCain giving him an award, along with Lindsey Graham. Does John McCain ever do anything that makes sense? No. And we're also going to explore today some audio clips, including one from Dr. Russell Blaylock, a man who I have a lot of respect for, who's a neuroscientist, talking about the connection between sugar and criminal behavior. I thought that this would be important because we have a lot of people addicted to sugar. There's some bad things that can happen. And we also have some other clips, audio clips, if time permits, we'll get to. So let's begin. We always like to begin with something that allows us to live a longer and healthier life. This is the University of Alabama, and there's growing evidence showing a connection between Parkinson's disease, which is a neurodegenerative condition, and the composition of the microbiome in the gut. And this new study from researchers at the University of Alabama shows that Parkinson's disease and medications to treat Parkinson's have distinct effects on the composition of the trillions of bacteria that make up the gut microbiome. This was published in Movement Disorders, the Journal of the International Parkinson's and Movement Disorder Society. Quote, "Our study showed major disruption," that's a bad thing, "of the normal microbiome, the organisms in the gut in individuals with Parkinson's." And that was from the professor who heads the Department of Neurology and their University of Alabama School of Medicine. So here's my perspective on this. The human gut in all of us hosts trillions of microorganisms, including more than 1,000 species of bacteria. Now, the collective genomes of the microorganisms in the gut is more than 100 times larger than the number of genes in the human genome. So we know that a well-balanced gut microbiota is critical for maintaining general health, and alterations in the composition of gut microbiota, or the bacteria in your gut, have been linked to a range of disorders. That we know, and so that's important. Now, how does this impact us? Let me give you a specific example. Over 7 years ago, I had a study. It was not a large study. There were about 26 people. It was a brain study. We had some people with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, memory loss. And the study lasted for a year and a half, almost a little over a year and a half, 16 months. Seven of the individuals in the study had complete reversal of their conditions. I mean complete. This was medically supervised by a board-certified neurologist, qualified psychiatrist, associate professor of neurology at Mount Sinai, and the author of over 68 published papers in the peer-reviewed literature. In effect, we had a well-designed study. And then we did an additional three-year follow-up, and the people not only did not rescind back into their conditions, they continued to improve. I'll give you two examples of those who were in the group. One was a 70-year-old engineer, African-American, and he was shaking like a leaf because we videotape all of our initial first day and our last day, entry and exit, to show a split-screen comparison where they tell you in their own words. His name was Thomas, and he could not brush his teeth. He could not feed himself because his hands shook so violently. The tremors were so excessive. He also had very poor balance. He was falling over a lot. He had to use a walker and an assistant to help him. And he had confusion, double vision. Within that year and a half, in his last appearance, Thomas had no Parkinson's symptoms at all. Parkinsonians, gone. He had no fainting, headaches. He had no imbalance. He had strength in his grip. He could hold any draft pen, utensil. He could brush his teeth and comb his hair without any problem at all. And he was actually power walking rather vigorously. His digestive problems were gone. The other person I'll use was a man named Kenny. Kenny had advanced near end stage multiple sclerosis. He was being seen by two different groups of neurologists. They had tried every medication, nothing worked. And he was now at that point, according to him and his wife, where they were planning his final stage, where they put ramps around his home and ramps on either to get him into the bed and then to prevent him from falling out of bed. But they said the end will come this way when you cannot move and you have no, your body's organs, and specifically your lungs, become vulnerable to mucus buildup and you simply drown in your own saliva. horrible thought, and yet he decided to make the change. On the final day, Kenny had no symptoms of multiple sclerosis at all. In fact, neither of his neurologists could find any destruction of his myelin sheath. It had been completely rebuilt, and he was completely healthy. In fact, he was healthier than he'd been in a long time. Now, all the people were on the same identical protocol. There was not a different protocol for Alzheimer's, ALS, myasthenia gravis, great, tremendous improvement in one person with Alzheimer's and myasthenia as well. And here is what they did. The very first thing that we did was we put everyone on an elimination diet, eliminating any pro-inflammatory items, coffee, carbonated beverages, sugars, animal proteins, wheat, gluten, all gone. Lots of juices, but also from the very beginning, the very first day, we began to rebuild the microbiota, the gut bacteria. Now, normally I would suggest people take, maybe 5 billion, 7 billion a day. They were starting at 50 billion and going to 100 billion a day. Remember, they're advanced. Disease is ravishing. They're all near death. And so you can't do tiny little amounts. I actually spoke one evening to him because one of the people said, why are we on such high doses of things? And I said, well, look at it like this. In America, we have been conditioned by the media, by our physicians, by public health officials to be ultra, ultra, radically conservative when it comes to doing anything for our health. But we've been ultra, ultra, radically liberal about destroying our health. No doctor, no nurse, no pharmacist ever stands beside you in a fast food restaurant saying, you realize you're eating 20 French fries. Your body doesn't need it. Those are saturated fats. Those are trans fats. Those are sodium. It's a refined carbohydrate. It's got acrylamides in the browning. It's going to cause disease. No one ever says that. No one ever says you're just putting a teaspoon of sugar into your coffee. That's about 3,000 little tiny granules of sugar. None of that does your body need. It's all harmful. No one does that. But take 6 vitamins and people lose their mind. Their head explodes. They can't handle anything outside of their paradigm. Nothing. And then suddenly says, gee, I've got to take 6 vitamins. Yeah, well, you just ate 20 French fries. Let me see which does the best for you. 6 vitamins, including vitamin C, a B complex, the omega-3 fatty acids, coenzyme Q10, vitamin E, all right, and also a high independent dose of probiotics. All good. 50,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature showing what the individual benefits are from taking these, the chemistry, the potency, safety, efficacy, and 20 French fries. All destructive, all harmful. Oh, and the hamburger, destructive, and the bologna, destructive, and the coffee, destructive, and the soft drink. So you got to understand, in order to help yourself, you have to first alter your perception, because our perception is our reality. And the more educated you are, the more difficult it is for you to change your mind, because you have far more in the epigenetics of your conditioning to defend, to protect, to guard, because your whole identity at some point and your lifestyle from that identity comes from the artificial hierarchical structure that we create and place people in. Oh, now you're a really good doctor, and therefore we should respect your judgment, not question it. After all, you are not just on the Upper West Side, you're on Park Avenue, and you have this whole floor. And someone says, yeah, but my doctor, Dr. Schmuck, is on the 83rd floor of a 34 building. I mean, he is literally that important. He is sacred. He is a god. He is infallible. Now, he charges $100,000 per minute to sit in front of him, but who wouldn't give everything in their life to sit in front of Dr. Schmuck, who rests in air like the great Buddha in levitation? We actually value people based upon strictly subjective constructs of value. And then we market that, or they market that, and then we start looking at people as if somehow I can't challenge them, I can't question. If they tell me the average American diet is good, I got to stick with it. If they tell me vitamins just create expensive urine, I got to believe it. If they say a holistic dentist is a quack, I got to trust their judgment. If they say there's no difference between genetically engineered food and regular food, I cannot offer my own opinion. If they say eat, get your meat in your diet so you'll have strong muscles and you can't get it from vegetables, who am I to challenge? And one day we wake up and we're voting Democrat or Republican, the ultimate absurdity in the lack of complete mindlessness in a society that has gone insane. We trust bankers. We use their credit cards. Think of all the things we do each day that if you really gave it thought and introspection, you say, this doesn't show a lot of deep thinking. So now imagine that you have people who have literally had to reverse their thinking about what should go in their body. The only thing that they can put in their body are things that heal it, help it, empower it, energize it, cleanse it, detoxify it, and revitalize it. Now think of the problem they had in surrendering all their comfort foods and all the things they were told by everyone were okay for them. And that's why we exceed the destruction of the energy as well as the physiopathology of the disease. And one day, they're taking 13 glasses of fresh organic juice a day. And boy, are they feeling good. And now they're seeing the benefits. Now they have accomplished this. So I just want to let you know that where these studies, good studies, like University of Alabama, they're just beginning to just barely open, not too much, just barely open to let one little light ray in at a time, because that's all any doctor or scientist in America who belongs to the paradigm is allowed. One brief ray of light at a time. And hence, they take their truth from one piece of a puzzle and then spend the rest of their career trying to find a second piece in a 1,000-piece puzzle. And they feel they've accomplished a great deal. They can live their whole life in notoriety and celebrity status and feel good about themselves. Look, I found two pieces of the puzzle of life. How many are there? I don't know. I just got two, and that's, look what that got me. It's rare that a doctor opens the entire door and takes an honest look, or anyone else for that matter, and sees life as it actually is. And then you can't pretend to emotionally, psychologically, or even philosophically or ideologically Photoshop onto a person, on into an institution, the false premises that somehow that institution cares about us. They don't. Do you think the people who have all the women in America wearing pink really are doing the best they can to fight cancer or walk for AIDS and finding the treatments? No. But as long as people believe that they're doing something, it doesn't matter if they walk right off a cliff. As long as everyone else is walking off the cliff, holding hands, it's one big nihilistic kumbaya. So that's why when you're going to do something in life, do it without the conditioning that somehow you're always looking over your shoulder, trying to get some kind of appeasement, rendition of truth from people who are clueless about anything materializing in the real world. It's all an illusion. All of life, for everyone, at every breath, for most people, is an illusion. It's only when you can breathe free of anyone else's contaminated beliefs that you appreciate how valuable being a free thinker is in a collective mindset society. And that's my commentary on human nature today. Finally up. Want your chicken? Good. Make sure that you're having chicken crap on it, because there's a 50% chance you are. So you're getting chicken feces when you eat at least half the chicken. Quote from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine: Americans love chicken, whether from factory farm or organic free range. We eat an average of 84 pounds of it per person per year. However, nutrition experts from Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine are now warning that grocery stores and factory farming are beginning to bring you meat contaminated with chicken feces. By the way, it's not now. It's always been. Scientists from the group were surprised at just how common it was to find contaminants on grocery stores' chicken. For the study, chicken products from 15 U.S. grocery store chains in 10 cities were tested for E. coli bacteria as evidence of fecal contamination. E. coli plus toxic chemicals and viruses found in store-bought chickens, and in fact, almost 50% of all the samples tested positive for the E. coli and feces. So that's what you're getting, no matter what kind of chicken you're buying. Chicken brands tested, including Foster Farms and Gerber's Poultry and Piggly Wiggly and Nature's Promise and Open Nature and Publix and Redbird Farms and Sanderson Farms and Wild Harvest Nature, Safeway, O Organics and Springer Mountain Farms and Pilgrim's Eating Right and Harris Teeter, Harvest Land and Smart Chicken, Roundy, Safeway, Super G, Hill Country Fair, Purdue. So those are the ones they tested, and up to 50% were contaminated. So just want to let you know that that is what you're eating and may not be aware of. And that's why a lot of food poisoning occurs in the United States. That is, oh, you got the stomach flu. Well, there is no such thing as a stomach flu. It does not exist. There is no virus specific to creating flu in the stomach. It's just one of those oxymoron notions. No, more often than not, we have food poisoning from the water we drink and from the food we eat. In fact, we don't wash our hands and we don't wash our asses. We're a very smelly, stinky, really gross-out society. But we never get that close to someone to really smell how bad their breath is or bleeding gums, the mucus and pus, because they don't floss or water pick or get proper dental hygiene. And they just, as long as we can do the makeup and smile, everything seems all right. But compared to other cultures in the world, we're not the cleanest. Why? I don't know. I can't answer that. But I guess if your parents practice proper hygiene, you're more likely as a kid to grow up with proper hygiene. But we are a stinky-do society, and that's unfortunate. Finally, a combination of amylopectin, that's amylopectin, and chromium can double the muscle protein synthesis compared to what was seen when using just a whey protein alone. That's a way of helping get better workouts, better muscle utilization. So anyone exercising, consider that, because that could help you. And that's something brand new. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. To welcome you, I'm Gary Nall. We've been told that Fukushima was okay. After all, the news media stopped covering it, and after a few weeks and months, it went away. The trouble is that Fukushima and the leak did not go away. And we just recently, in the last couple of months, found how dangerous it is and how hot it is in there, and the fact that we didn't realize that there was a giant underground aquifer the radiation has been leaking into, and then that aquifer carries that water to irrigation systems all across Japan, or much of Japan. Also, there's a mountain range behind it, and we didn't know this, that all that water coming down from the mountain range was going right underneath the different reactors and becoming contaminated and then going into the water of the ocean or otherwise. So they finally told us the truth this week, But then they found out that they were wrong on top of it. I want to play you the latest. You have not heard this. It's Fukushima official, radioactive water, retaining wall. And that was all good news until it wasn't. And we haven't seen a thing about this in American media.
Engineers at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant are struggling to stop hundreds of tons of radioactive groundwater from seeping into the Pacific Ocean every day. Crews have started pumping some of the water from the ground as a temporary measure to contain the leak. Government officials say about 1,000 tons of groundwater could be flowing from a hillside into the soil below the plant every day. Of that, about a third filters through a contaminated area and is laced with radioactive substances. Then it seeps into the sea. 400 tons of water is leaking into the basements of the buildings housing the reactors. That water is also contaminated, and it's being pumped out and stored. Crews at the plant have been injecting soil hardening chemicals into the ground on part of the site to stop the water leaking into the ocean. But there are concerns this effort may be pushing water levels higher above the barrier. TEPCO workers are trying to counter this effect by pumping out some of the water from a new well. They're also planning to sink about 30 5-meter-long pipes into the ground. Workers will use the pipes to pump out groundwater starting next week. They hope to drain 100 tons per day. Long term, they're considering freezing the soil beneath the buildings. Crews would bury pipes and inside them circulate coolant kept below freezing temperatures. The frozen soil will act as a dam to prevent groundwater from reaching the contaminated area, but it could take 1 to 2 years to complete the project, and maintaining the cooling operations will be extremely costly. Japanese leaders say they want to accelerate the cleanup of communities affected by the nuclear accident. A large area remains contaminated with radiation, and the government has yet to solve the issue of where to store radioactive waste. Environment Ministry officials plan will reinforce the team of 430 government employees assigned to the cleanup. The new additions have expertise in public works projects and land purchases. Their mission will be to build provisional storage sites to hold contaminated soil and other waste. Municipal authorities are reluctant to host such facilities because of fears about radiation.
Officials in charge of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant say they've run into another problem. They say a wall they built to stop contaminated groundwater from seeping into the sea has failed. The industry ministry estimates that 300 tons of tainted groundwater are flowing into the Pacific Ocean every day. Engineers from Tokyo Electric Power Company injected chemicals into the earth to harden it and create an underground wall. But they were unable to solidify the soil closest to the surface. TEPCO workers recently dug a well just inside a new wall to monitor the water level. They found it was slightly higher than the top of the wall. The workers are pumping out contaminated groundwater as a temporary measure. Officials with the International Atomic Energy Agency say Japanese authorities are keeping them informed about the radioactive water leakage. They released a statement saying they're keeping track of the problem, and the Japanese officials had explained their countermeasures. Okay, experts from the IAEA visited the plant in April to assess the situation. They urged operators to review their strategy for dealing with accumulated water. They said it was vital to have measures.
Now, keep in mind, Japan is hosting the next Olympics. They actually will have people living close to the Fukushima Daiichi plant. Now, maybe there's a new law in physics that says beyond 15 miles, the wind doesn't blow radiation. It must stop because a governmental official, a bureaucrat, says, well, this is how far you can go when it's dangerous, but 1 inch more than that, it's not dangerous. You can live there. You can grow food there. You can drink water from there. You can have an athletic event there. There should not be any Olympics in Japan. There should be a worldwide consortium of the best minds coming together because it's all of our world that's impacted by this. And the Japanese, the corruption of the Japanese government, which is endemic, the corruption of the company involved, all that should be set aside, and we should go in there and say, let us bring the best minds together to stop this, because also it's polluting the ocean every single second of the day, and we should do something about it. We're going to our guests in about 8 minutes, but before we do, I'm going to play a little audio clip. Before that audio clip, something to think about. Frequently when I'm doing things in life, simple things, I'm so conscious of the moment I'm in, I don't want it to end, especially when you're doing things that allow you to harmonize your energy with other persons or with nature. And I can remember once being down at my ranch in Texas, the old Healing Springs Ranch, that I actually purchased from my brother, who always wanted to be a cowboy. And then he had a chance from being a hillbilly to a cowboy. And they loved him down there. Howard had this infectious personality, always smiling, always looking at the best side of life. And this was the big country, the big sky. And one night in the summer, we're walking down this road that ran parallel to the property down to Lake Ray Roberts. And it was nothing on the road except these old pastures where you'd see horses and cows, and they'd come right over to you and you could pet them. And I looked up at the sky, and my brother said, this is a timeless moment. It was quiet, it was warm out, and there was the vastness of the universe. And at once, feeling overwhelmed by it, and also saddened by it. And I said to Howard, you realize, Howard, that the sky we're looking at, the stars we're looking at, millions of years old, and many of them dead, that's what people 100, 200, 1,000 years ago in the same space would have seen. And there are times in life where we are aware. You're simply so intuitively aware of where you're at, what you're doing, that you want it to last. But part of us also is realistic, where we understand that everything in life, everyone, everything we value has an expiration date. And sooner or later, everything will, unfortunately, no longer be a part of us. And the key is to be aware of that while you're in the present moment with someone or something, your dog, your cat, your bird, your friend, your family, because the day will come when that won't be there. And frequently people live with a sense of detachment. Now, Buddha said, you know, detach. Yes, a healthy detachment realizes you can appreciate what you have without being overly consumed by it. But then there's the detachment of indifference. We don't think about a day or a person or a meal. You don't think about anything because you're living through it, or you're living towards something else. I'm going to not worry about my life now. I'm just going to work as hard as I can, put my head down. I'm going to be stressed to the max. I'm going to make time and reality synonymous. But when I finally hear the gun go off and I'm on my final lap and I look up, I've achieved something, then I'll begin to slow down, take it easy, exhale, breathe nicely, and that rarefied air of accomplishment. Let's now go over to Tampa, Florida. We're standing by is Kevin Shipp, S-H-I-P-P. We're going to look at the shadow government. And the overarching issue is, are we in the midst of a silent coup by one faction of the government? Kevin Shipp is a former CIA officer who for 17 years specialized in counterintelligence and counterterrorism and espionage investigations. He received outstanding meritorious citations and performance awards for his services in high-risk operations. He holds a master's degree in forensic psychophysiology. He is the author of From the Company of Shadows, which is a first-hand account of how the CIA conducts operations, the agency's use of secrecy, and the privileges of operating outside of the rule of constitutional and international law. Nice to have you with us today, Kevin.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for having me.
Kevin, there's been much said and written about the shadow government. I call it the deep hand, because behind everything, there are people who are manipulating. For what purpose, we do not always know, may never know, but they're manipulating events, they're manipulating policies, and they do by manipulating individuals. And We call it the deep state. And commentators and analysts will tend to emphasize one characteristic or faction in this structure more than another. For example, Mike Lofgren, who recently was on this program, puts attention on the corporatocracy in Wall Street. Others look at the Pentagon or the intelligence agencies such as the National Security Agency, Homeland Security, and the CIA. Others target the wealthy elites of enormous power with a means to act as puppet masters for politicians and legislators. And so from your deep perspective, the CIA and the intelligence agencies are a critical faction for understanding this shadow government. So please explain its role in the government and how it actually functions behind the scenes in Washington and other places, and particularly the impact it has on previous White Houses and Congress, and then what it may be doing, and I say may, to this current administration.
Yes, thank you, Gary. And I think that was an excellent description that you gave of the different components of the shadow government. I witnessed the shadow government from the inside when I was an intelligence officer, and had an eye-opening experience when I saw exactly what the shadow government, specifically the CIA and the intelligence communities, are doing outside the U.S. Constitution with taxpayer dollars and secret budgets and without the knowledge even of Congress, much less the American people. And Lofgren's book is very, very good. I've read it, and he did a great job. It touches on one important aspect of what I came out in 2013, was calling it the shadow government. It's also referred to as the deep state. Peter Dale Scott has written an excellent book on the deep state, which I think he's encapsulated some very important truths. What I have seen is the shadow government is a complex matrix, and it includes all of the things that you just mentioned. They are all tied together. In my view, the CIA basically is a central node, but they're all tied together in one particular global program. For example, the shadow government, as I call it, or the deep state, depending on which term you want to choose, is comprised of the secret intelligence agencies, the concert of which much of the time function without the knowledge of Congress. It includes the CIA and the Pentagon, which control the massive budgets and programs for what some people call the military-industrial complex. It's interesting that Eisenhower originally referred to it as the Congressional Military-Industrial Complex, and he was coerced into taking the congressional part off of that. I think we all know that Congress is tied through lobbyists and others pretty directly to the MIC. So it includes that. What a lot of people don't know is that the CIA and NSA also control the judiciary branch, in that any cases that come against the CIA or the NSA, the domestic surveillance program, are shut down in the judiciary immediately using what's called the state's secrets privilege. They're sealed, and no one, not even Congress or Senate, can see the evidence in the case. So they have control over the judiciary also. It includes, as Mr. Lofgren has pointed out so well, it includes the Wall Street banks who are tied in funding the military-industrial complex. They're tied into many, many CIA programs and some of the black global funds that the CIA is involved in. And, of course, that goes all the way back. The creators of the Central Intelligence Agency and the Council on Foreign Relations were all Wall Street bankers and lawyers, so its origin sprang out of the financial and central bank portions of the world and the United States. So globalism is a big part of that. And what we're seeing in addition to that, as part of the secret government, which is very concerning, is it now is including Silicon Valley. The CIA, unknown to a lot of people, has struck up huge multi-million-dollar contracts with Google. Google is working with the CIA on a project called InQtel, which is a secret program to monitor quote-unquote trends on the Internet. Amazon just entered into a $600 million contract with the CIA for quote-unquote cloud technologies. And on it goes. So what the CIA does as part of the shadow government is they will come to Silicon Valley and they will capture the technology, especially the IT technology, by offering them huge government contracts, which, of course, every company is trying to get. Once they agree, they all sign CIA secrecy agreements. They're bound by the oath, and that program becomes covert, and the CEOs of these companies can never talk about the details again or face prosecution. So Silicon Valley is a part of the shadow government. And lastly, and perhaps the most disconcerting, is the shadow government's manipulation of the news media. Now, that's been going on all the way back to the 1970s through a program called Operation Mockingbird, which some of your listeners may be aware of. Most people think Operation Mockingbird was done away with. That is not the case. In 1976, George Bush Sr. allegedly ended the paid part of Mockingbird, where they were paying journalists to insert stories into the U.S. press. But in 1976, Operation Mockingbird was turned into a quote-unquote voluntary program, and that continues today. So, and we have several examples, probably don't have time for, where the CIA has been manipulating the news media and putting out the message to the American public that it wants. It is still doing that today. I experienced that in my own case when I wrote the book and went to a national paper and found out that that paper was communicating directly with the CIA. So what you have is a complex matrix of all these things, and they're all functioning together, connected together in kind of a global massive groupthink. And the people that are connected to most of the deeper areas of the shadow government are all bound by secrecy agreements, which is basically a lifetime oath from talking about anything that they're doing. And I have I've given lectures on the size and scope of the shadow government. And if I may, if we have time, go into some of the size and scope of this, what I call a monster.
Please do.
For example, what you don't hear much about right now, especially after 9/11, there are 10,000 secret U.S. government sites across the United States within America that are operating secret programs connected into this shadow government. There are 1,270 federal agencies involved in secrecy within the United States. We're not talking overseas. We're talking within the United States. There are 1,391 large private corporations that are also involved in secrecy connected to the CIA, the NSA, and their programs. About, and it's probably a lot more than this, but what we know, 4.8 million Americans currently hold government secrecy clearances, which means they're bound by the secrecy oath and potential prosecution. There's probably close to 900,000 Americans that we know of that have top secret government clearances. And then the military-industrial complex includes companies like Raytheon, companies like that. Hundreds of thousands of military-industrial complex corporations have CIA and NSA contracts, and all of those hundreds of thousands of Americans are bound by CIA and NSA secrecy agreements, as are their CEOs, their logistics people, the secretaries, and even people that copy things on the copier. Anyone that has access to those programs are bound by secrecy. So it is a massive system that is controlling a large population within the United States. And the shadow government I just described, not even Congress knows the size and extent of this shadow apparatus that's operating within the United States. So it is massive. And I think every American, all of us in our gut, know that there's something going on here. Many times you just can't quite put your finger on. But we see these black programs going on over in Benghazi with the Free Syrian Army. ISIS is winding up with American tanks and weapons. And we see these, and this has been going on for the last 40 years, we see these dark operations happening, and no one has asked the American people whether they would like to have a voice in that. And, of course, we would. This is all going on without any of our input. That is a constitutional crisis. So we all know that this is happening. Everybody in their gut knows that there's something going on behind the scenes. And what I have attempted to do since I came out is try to codify all this and kind of make it as easy for people to see as they can that there is indeed a structure behind the scenes that is running things behind Washington, behind the visible government that we see, the political government that we see. There is indeed a shadow government that is really running things behind the scenes.
Hold on, because yes. I want to get to some other areas. I appreciate that extended overview. Thank you, Kevin.
Sure, Gary.
When I look at other people and something doesn't make sense, here's what doesn't make sense. A lot of people are angry at Donald Trump for what they believe he is capable of doing, and they may be absolutely right. And some of his egregious remarks, sexist and homophobic and Islamophobic, and they are right, too, to be concerned. But where was their concern about people who actually did things, actually droned people, caused deaths, signed off execution orders, who made enormous amounts of money doing what anyone would consider an illegal or unethical or unconstitutional efforts, like the Clintons and the Obamas and the original Clinton? None of them ever held accountable. None of them brought to justice. I'll give you one example, and I'd like to see if whether or not you feel that the CIA was they had to have been aware of it because the National Security Agency monitors everything. This is from Deidre Fulton from Common Dreams. As oil money flowed, Clinton turned her back on rights abuses in Colombia. And it talks about how in January 2011, she met with the president of Colombia and or the vice president of Colombia, and they reached out to do a deal. And then Clinton reversed herself completely once it was shown that her foundation was receiving money from the people, from this private company that was involved in this deal. And millions of dollars were pledged by the oil company involved to the Clinton Foundation. And hence Clinton suddenly became pro-Columbia trade pact that she had previously opposed on the grounds that it was bad for labor rights. Well, it was not only bad for labor rights, but there were 1,337 death threats, 1,933 actual acts of violence against unionists, 105 were assassinated, union activists were assassinated. And all this came after, after this deal. So here's the situation, one of many, where she uses the State Department, and she couldn't be doing that without the CIA's awareness. That you can't be doing all these transactions, all these meetings, all these emails, all these phone calls without a lot of people hearing it, knowing what you're doing, and yet not once was she called out. Now, when you look at her, the totality of all that she and her husband have done and of what Obama has done to countries, what role did the CIA play in this, or what role the CIA should have played in this?
Well, you're right. You're right on target, Gary. I know, having worked within the CIA and quite a bit with the Department of State, even up to the upper floors, there's absolutely no doubt that both of those agencies coordinate with each other very closely, especially on some of these operations that you're talking about and other things. There's no question about that. That Secretary of State Clinton was plugged in and connected to the CIA and its operations, and one of the most outward examples of that would be Benghazi. The cover-up of the terrorist attack in Benghazi, the connection of Benghazi. We know now that Secretary Clinton was running guns, using Saudi Arabia and Qatar as a cutout, running guns into Benghazi for transport up to the Free Syrian Army, which was an Islamic radical army up in Syria, to topple the Syrian government. Now, not even Congress knew that that was going on. The Department of State at the high levels knew. The CIA knew. John Brennan, the director of the CIA, knew. Congress did not. That's a pretty serious constitutional problem. And what we see, and this is an outward, obvious outward evidence of the shadow government. We see this kind of activity occur across parties, Democrat and Republican. We see it occur across different presidents. I mean, when Barack Obama was first elected, we all were thrilled and hoped and wished that we kind of had a new era in the United States and something new was happening. And then we find out that Barack Obama has just expanded the surveillance state, especially the NSA, more than any other president before. We go back to George Bush and the false intelligence that they disseminated about Iraq, which led into a war that cost us 5,000 American troops that were killed, about 6,000 badly injured and maimed, and 113,000 Iraqi civilians were killed because of a false invasion into Iraq. We go all the way back to 9/11, and some of the concerning parts of 9/11, George Bush blacked out 28 pages in the congressional 9/11 report that appears are connected to Saudi Arabia involvement. We know that Bush and his family were in multimillion-dollar oil deals with the Bin Laden family up to 9/11, and on and on and on it goes. So with the shadow government, even General Michael Hayden came out on a History Channel interview. He said this a couple times, very, very chilling. He said, well, it doesn't really matter who the president is because essentially we control the office of the presidency, and that stays the same despite its occupant. Probably the best summary of the shadow government I've ever heard by one of its senior proponents. So That's why we're seeing this sort of thing happen, even with candidates that we believed in and hoped would come in and bring more democratic change. They don't, because they're part of the system that we're talking about.
As you know, the person who rightly should have been the Democratic nominee was Bernie Sanders. WikiLeaks has gone on record repeatedly saying we receive no cables or any information from the Russians. I've never met with the Russians, never met with Vladimir Putin or anyone else. This came from two sources inside the Democratic National Committee.
That's correct.
And one was a thumb drive with documents given in a park. And WikiLeaks has a reputation of never been inaccurate on 10 million documents that have been revealed.
That's correct.
And there would have been no reason for him to lie. Now, all you hear today is both the Democrat and Republican talking heads on television, it's the Russians interfering. This deserves a special investigation. And I'm thinking, I've seen no evidence. Now, I'm an award-winning investigative journalist for over 45 years. I've broken a lot of stories. I would never trust anything today reported by the New York Times or Washington Post or the CNN based upon the lack of quality of and objectivity I see in all the reporting now on these subjects. And I can't help but believe that behind these false stories, behind the talking points, are people within the national intelligence agencies who are afraid of Donald Trump because they don't control him yet. Your thoughts?
Well, Gary, I think you just nailed it. The way I kind of like to put it is you'll know a man by his enemies or a woman by her enemies. Donald Trump has said some bizarre things that has really kind of been like fingernails on a chalkboard to a lot of us. But he has got the entire intelligence establishment arrayed against him. And there are people that really are concerned deeply about Donald Trump and others that support him. So I'm looking at it from an apolitical view. Regarding the articles that we see in the newspaper, you remember I mentioned the CIA's Project Operation Mockingbird, something that some listeners may not know. Amazon has a $600 million contract with the CIA. Amazon has purchased the Washington Post. I can tell you that the Washington Post has a direct relationship with the CIA going all the way back to when I was in there. The Washington Post has fed information from the CIA, and some other time we can talk about how the CIA does that. The CIA manipulates the Washington Post and only gives them stories that the CIA wants out there. A classic example is this so-called dossier that was leaked on Donald Trump about his alleged activities in Russia from a so-called former British intelligence officer. Well, it turns out that dossier is completely false, but it was picked up not just by the Washington Post and other members of the news media, but it was actually taken by the director of the CIA, John Brennan, and the director of national intelligence, James Clapper, and disseminated to Congress as actual intelligence, which it was not. Now, why on earth would our intelligence community go after a president-elect in such a dramatic fashion? And you probably have done quite a bit of this too, Gary, but Donald Trump is way out of the box. Love him or hate him, and I kind of stand in the middle on that, but there's no question about the fact that he's not part of the system. He's not part of the shadow government. He has made comments going all the way back to the Kennedy assassination about the intelligence community's role in certain events. So he represents, in my view, a direct threat to the shadow government. And you can tell, as I mentioned earlier, by his enemies. For example, former CIA director, former NSA director, General Michael Hayden, came out and called Donald Trump a threat to national security. Former acting director of the CIA, Mike Morrell, came out and also said that Donald Trump was a threat to national security. And if we know that General Michael Hayden was the creator of the NSA domestic spying program, we know that director of CIA Morrell was responsible for the cover-up of Benghazi, the terrorist attacks there, and the support of the Free Syrian Army, along with Secretary Clinton's arms program. John Brennan has come out against Donald Trump several times. We know that John Brennan, who has made statements about geoengineering, which maybe we can talk about later, John Brennan was actively engaged in covert programs without Congress's knowledge, supplying arms and weapons to the Free Syrian Army to topple Syria, and eventually much of that wound up in the hands of ISIS. So you have a war going on in Washington behind the secret state, the deep state, or the shadow government, whichever term you want to choose, and this new upstart, rich maverick who is shaking up the entire system. And they're coming up with all kinds of false allegations of Russian connections, none of which are true, Russian hacking, none of which is true. A lot of sources, including former British Ambassador Craig Murray, said, no, that wasn't a hack. I was given the information personally and provided it to WikiLeaks. So it was provided by a DNC insider, not by a Russian hack. So. And yet the press takes it and is just pounding on the Russian hack and the Russian connection. The reason being, in my view, is that sectors of the press are connected to the shadow government and some of these intelligence agencies, and they're parroting the talking points they're being given against this new president-elect.
Well, final thought here. I believe that Trump is the kind of guy who will not go quietly and will fight back. And the more he fights back and the more he challenges what is being done against him, the more likely that the press will then use that against him. But for those who are simply watching this, it's telling us far more about those who fear the inability to control him, where they had complete confidence in controlling Clinton, Obama,
exactly.
Bush, and they cannot afford, with those hundreds of thousands of military-industrial complex companies and other companies, to go without the feeding trough that's always been there that the American public can't feed at. We can lose our homes, our businesses. We can not feed our children. But they make sure that the millions of people involved in supporting that hidden agenda, the deep state, that they're always first in line with a 10-portion serving of everything they want in life. Trump represented a threat. We'll see how this plays out. I'm going to invite you back for a full hour on our Progressive Commentary Hour to talk more in depth about some of the issues we didn't get to, including the chemtrails and geoengineering and your position on that. All right, Kevin?
Sure, Gary. Be glad to. Thank you.
Kevin Shipp, 17 years with the CIA and highly regarded and had access to a lot of stuff that was going on, and we'll talk to him in the future coming up about what some of that represented. And he is the author of From the Company. And so I'm Gary Noll, and I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen today, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone.